Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Liz Loza. I'm here with Matt Harmon and producer Brett, but more importantly, an exciting forget us, chuckleheads, James Rodet of A Million Little Things, Not Pieces, is here with us.
That's right. Thank you for inviting me over. I was in the bathroom.
In Vancouver.
Yeah. No, I love a clean startup bathroom. And,
oh, we do have those here at the Yahoo campus.
So I just thought I'd drop by and use as many of them as I could.
So you guys might not know this. James is very famous. He's been on many, many things. But mostly he's famous for being the co-manager of one of my big money leagues.
It's a high stakes league.
High stakes league.
Yeah. It's the National Fantasy Football Championship. Do you ever worry, like, leading up to times like this when you know that we're going to get to see each other and hang out and do whatever it is?
I worry
that
about
doing
a lot when we're going
to
hang
out. But do you ever
think
to yourself, oh man, he's too famous now? Like, is that ever an issue for you where you're like, is there ever going to come a point where it gets a little weird for us because he's just so big?
Well, I actually was worried that you were going to think that about
you.
Yeah.
Right. Because now the podcast, twice a week.
Yeah. And don't forget the Fantasy Rush and
Fantasy
Football
all
Live.
The shows
and Cover 3.
Cover 3, yeah.
So that's good. I think that's a fair question for both of us. And you don't have to answer it now.
We'll let it ruminate.
Yeah,
maybe we'll
let
the audience decide.
Yeah,
the audience can decide by the end of the show.
All right, good. Now we have a floater.
So my co-host here, he has an ex-lover, and they are the Carolina Panthers, and they are without Cam Newton. But
well, it's a complicated relationship.
Sure.
Yeah. As they all seem to be. Anyway, what were your thoughts on Kyle Allen's driving the struggle bus in week 5?
I mean, he didn't look great.
Did he not pass the eye test?
I don't know. I mean, this was definitely the worst of his 3 starts, I think. But, I mean, for all the jokes that, you know, like analytics Twitter has out there about who is or is not the engine of certain offenses with the running back position, Christian McCaffrey was the engine of the offense today, and it seems like pretty much every day. So I think for the Panthers, they have to be really encouraged that they're 3-0 without Cam Newton. And at this point, we know he's not going to come back until he's 100%. Whether that's going to happen at some point later this year or not, I think the fact that they're probably staying in contention here keeps those odds, you know, more favorable that he is going to come back at some point this year.
He also did my slop bucket of a team, the Titans, a favor by...
Oh, you're a Titans fan.
By dropping the Jaguars. Yeah.
You hate to see that.
Not that it's going to be really... not that it's really going to matter for us down the stretch, but at least for now, it keeps that division as mediocre looking as ever.
So you're a Titans fan. I want to ask you off the top here. What do you feel about Derrick Henry? Do you like Derrick Henry?
I like Derrick Henry. I like the rhinoceros horn that shoots out the back of his helmet.
Hell yeah.
Matt calls it his ponytail.
I'm way into that guy. Outside of Derrick Henry, that offense is very, very difficult to watch.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a big Derrick Henry fan. I have been for a long time, and people like still get after me online that he's like not actually a good player. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Like,
I think he's pretty beastly. I think if they could ever get anything going and go and have a lead in the second half of a game, could just watch that guy crush people.
Wear down against the Falcons. He was like 27 carries
and just destroy human beings.
Yeah, but I love Derrick Henry.
The problem is we have a college quarterback. still playing like he's a college quarterback. So, I don't know. It's tough.
Greg Olsen's a little bit problematic from a fantasy point of view, right? He beasted against some bad... Well, people are playing him. Don't look at me sure like it's
a
thing.
Sure, I'm agreeing with you.
No, he's a name that people still associate with production, you know?
And he did go ham over the first 2 weeks of the season, but he's put together 2 duds, 2 targets, and a goose egg in terms of production here. No catches, obviously. No yards as well. Next week, though... The Carolina Panthers draw the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They have allowed the 2nd most fantasy points heading into this week to the tight end position. Not that that's like a perfectly clean stat, but just for some sort of context. Do you think that's a decent bounce back spot for Greg Olsen?
Yeah, the Bucs are starting to emerge as one of those funnel defenses where you can't really run on them all that well. Even in today's game, Alvin Kamara, 3.9 yards per carry. And then Jared Cook kind of got... You know, he looked he got cooking. he looked like an actual human entity with 4 for 41 on 6 targets and his first touchdown as a Saint. I think that's a pretty good bounce back spot. That's a game where you kind of always have to ask yourself with the Bucks, like if they can really keep things competitive as like a team that can really get into a shootout, because there's always a potential that Jameis Winston can throw up on his own shoes. And the Panthers defense today, I thought this was the most rattled I'd seen of Gardner Minshew so far. And that's one thing that I don't, and that's saying a lot because I don't think he's looked rattled at all for most of the season. So there were just a couple moments today where he lost a fumble. The pressure seemed to get to him. So I think this Panthers defense is legit, even if a few of the wide receivers got rolling here. So I could see this being a game where we think it might be a shootout, but it doesn't necessarily go that way.
I have a very important question, and it's probably going to be more for you, Liz,
sure,
than you, Matt.
I'm nervous.
What are the chances that Gardner takes advantage of the Halloween holiday and parades around as Schneider from One Day at a Time? Is he that clever?
I mean, I think
because he's young.
He should just go with it. I don't know if he knows who that person is.
I think someone should tell him because he's 70% of the way there already.
I don't know what the hell your One Day at a Time is.
You guys don't remember one? I know you don't, Matt. It was probably canceled before you were born. But but One Day at a Time was a sitcom in the early 80s. And it may have started.
You know, I'm significantly younger than you.
Yes, but you still like no entertainment.
Yeah, sure.
No, it was
the references.
They
my
lived.
Friend.
They lived in this apartment, and Schneider was the handyman. Mm. And if we brought him up right now, then you would both jump on this bandwagon willingly because you would see that Minshew is ready to go. That's it. That was my interlude. You guys gave me absolutely nothing on it. And please, by all means, let's get back to talking football.
Well, I do appreciate you, James, for moving us over to the Jacksonville side of the ball.
Sure.
Because Leonard Fournette, for all of his inefficiency, has managed 333 yards over his past 2 weeks. He found the end zone today as well. 333 has got to mean something in some mystical oracle chapter book, right? I don't know what, but I'm sure that there's a shop on Venice that on Venice Boulevard that could tell me. By the way, I was on Abercrombie on Friday. Venice is just like the spot, the whole thing.
It's
the spot. I was having a moment. So do we appreciate the fact that Gardner Minshew has, even if he had looked a little rattled today, is able to give this offense enough balance that they have an opportunity to get the run game going?
Yeah, and I don't mean to say like he looked rattled all game. I just mean that this was the most like, okay, there were a couple like rookie quarterback moments, which if you're a six round pick and you're just now having your rookie quarterback moments, that's pretty solid. I think with Leonard Fournette coming into week four, when he went ham against the Broncos, he had pretty much had like the best usage for any running back coming in. There was just no production in terms of snaps, you know, percentage of team carries, routes run on the team among running backs. Like he was getting all the work. He was the ultimate trust the volume play. And the last 2 weeks, it's really turned around. And to your point, Liz, I think it is because they have a legitimate quarterback back there in Gardner Minshew, who's also unlocking DJ Chark, who's unlocking Chris Conley. DeeDee Westbrook even has a little bit going. Yeah, okay, that
One Day at a Time, Pat Harrington Jr., indeed, yeah, okay, Ash Schneider.
That is pretty perfect there.
Can James, we lay this to rest with a little bit more love?
Yes, yes. James okay. is showing us a photo of this corporeal human that he has suggested looks like.
Thank you.
Gardner Minshew, and indeed he is correct. But who the hell cares about this guy, Schneider, or Leonard Fournette, when DJ, damn it, Chark is defying matchups week to week. Now, he didn't do much last week with Chris Harris covering him, but he almost had a couple bombs. And this week against James Bradbury, who shut down Davante Adams and I think Nuke Hopkins as well.
He had a good game against Hopkins, yeah.
Wow. Like, caught 11, converted 8 of 11 for 164 and 2 scores. He is matchup proof. You are putting him, I assume, in your top 15 every week?
I think he's the most surprising player
of
for me personally for 2019. Yeah, because
yeah.
he wasn't a guy that like was on my radar at all for this Jaguars receiver core this year. Because at different, I mean, DeeDee Westbrook was the guy that I think everybody penciled in for 100 targets this year because he was pretty close to like a breakout season last year. He's that kind of speed slot player. Liz, you like Chris Conley, and I thought the Chris Conley pick was minorly intriguing, you know, too. Like, so there was something there. And pretty much, I don't know that anyone was projecting a big breakout season for DJ Chark, but I mean, he looks the part too. Like everything is there, and that connection's been clicking all year.
He's got the Saints next week too, and I will definitely put my money up against Chark instead of Lattimore.
Doesn't DeeDee Westbrook sound like an F. Scott Fitzgerald character?
I mean, we're just like screw it. We're not even going to reference the 80s. We're going to reference like
it feels like DeeDee Westbrook
in the 20s.
It feels like DeeDee Westbrook could have been like playing golf with Jordan in like Great Gatsby. Like, oh, where's Jordan? Oh, she's got a tea time with Dee Dee Westbrook.
Dee Dee is like at noon.
It's a fair point. Anyway. He did show out much better. Thank you for referencing him, though. I mean, I think he has made up for the ugly drops that he had a couple of weeks ago.
You know what's interesting, too? You mentioned that Lattimore matchup.
Westbrook has the better matchup.
Yeah, you're right. But one note that caught my attention last week during the Sunday Night Football broadcast when they were talking about Amari Cooper versus Marshawn Lattimore, and Marshawn Lattimore did a really good job against Amari Cooper. And then, you know, theoretically, we have to like dig into the full report today. But I mean, it looks like he did a great job against Mike Evans, who threw up a zero spot against the Saints.
I mean, Eli Apple's on the other side.
Right. And I thought what was interesting was Chris Collinsworth pointed out during the Sunday Night Football broadcast that, like, he's like, I don't want to say he's lazy, but Marshawn Lattimore, the staff has even noticed, like, he gets up for the bigger challenges, you know, like the Mike Evans, the Julio Jones, the Amari Coopers of the world. He gets, like, really amped to shut those guys down. DJ Chark's having a great season, but I don't know that he's, like, up to there, you know, like he's not at that status. So I wonder if Lattimore does, like, even travel around with a guy like Chark, or if he does. This narrative that Collins, I guess, what's one of the things that like a broadcaster said? I was like, that's actually really interesting because usually they don't just like, especially Collinsworth, not just gonna pull that out of his ass. Like he heard
it from somewhere. Bradbury's been much more consistent than Lattimore, and Chark beat him.
Yeah,
you're talking about Chris Collinsworth's ass because I was distracted because I was sending a text.
Yeah,
and when I got back into the group, it sounded like you were just talking about
some people have daddy issues.
Okay,
it's a thing that some people have.
Proceed.
Sure.
Okay, I think. If I were to have daddy issues, they wouldn't be for Mike Zimmer. He's a little bit too strict of a daddy for me.
He's a stubborn man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about him because...
The eye patch look didn't do it for you a couple of years ago?
I mean, that could be some, like, frisky pirate.
Sure.
Right? I mean, again, I'd be more worried about, you know, getting conjunctivitis, but
what
fine.
I'm hearing is that the eye patch did do it for her.
Yeah. I mean, it made her think about it.
It is almost Halloween. Well, you were talking about Minnesota and Giants. We all know if anyone's doing it for me, it's Eli Manning, RIP.
Oh. Yeah.
So, is that all he's doing these days?
Oh, buddy.
Let's talk about the Vikings, because for everything that happened, you know, heading into this matchup, Matt and I were like, I won't speak for you, friend. I was like, I will lean into the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And that was half right, because Adam Thielen did go off. And
they
yet...
squeaked the right way, you know.
Okay. but Stephon Diggs was upset. I went to the locker room, did not have a lot of looks. Basically, Thielen got going, and then in the second half, the team was far enough ahead so they could lean on the run game and then didn't need to air it out anymore, which is going to be a constant. But the good news is at least the first half opened with Kirk Cousins not just slinging the ball, but also managing completions.
Yeah, that was nice. There were a couple of big pressure opportunities, some key sacks that Kirk Cousins took, too. And it's like, if that's happening against the Giants, like, that's a little problematic. But at the same time, yeah, definitely some good moments between him and Adam Thielen. The Diggs thing is weird because, like we talked about, Mike Zimmer, strict disciplinarian type guy. I don't think this team wants to trade Stephon Diggs. They don't have really any incentive to do it. He definitely wants to be out.
Wink, wink.
Like, he wants to be out. He had that little wink today. There's been, like, a little bit of... It seems like there's been a little bit of tension behind the scenes between these two parties for a long time now, even dating back into the offseason. Like, he missed some practices.
Yeah, but the same was true of Adam Thielen, too.
Yeah, didn't they?
But Adam Thielen, like, went off on Kirk Cousins down the stretch of last year.
But he never missed practice, and you never miss a
practice. We did a mouthless emoji.
Let me ask you two this question.
Okay.
If you're Gruden and the Oakland Raiders...
Yes.
And you've won three more games than you probably thought you were going to at this point in the season... And Tyrell Williams is down, and you've already tried to trade for Antonio Brown, and it didn't work out. Are you at least kicking the tires on Stephon Diggs?
Sure.
Because you've got some momentum.
And this is a much better take than the Patriots, by the way, which is the take that everyone has.
And, yeah, that is. Well, the worst take is people like a couple of like Washington fans. Like I tweeted about Stephon Diggs this week, and then they'll come in and be like, come on back home. Yeah. Cause he's like from the, come on back home. It's like, geez, bro. Like he's not happy on the Vikings. He's going to be f-ing happy with your team. I don't think so.
I feel like you could use Diggs in a lot of ways that they were probably thinking they were going to be able to use AB in Oakland.
Sure.
And they're in a division where all of a sudden the Broncos are terrible. The Chargers look pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And the Raiders have a shot. they have a shot to do something this year if they keep playing the way they're playing. I don't know.
I think that's fascinating. And I'm glad you brought that up because I keep thinking about the fact that the trade deadline is October 29th, which is swiftly approaching. Next week's matchup is against the Philadelphia Eagles. We know that that's a burnable secondary. Why in the world Zimmer isn't at least showcasing Stephon Diggs in these big moment matchups where he could? I mean, you want to showcase him for at least offers, see what you can get, test the market a little bit. Why not test the market against the Jack Rabbit and DeAndre Baker? Why not test him against this Eagle secondary? So it is hard for me to pull away from him just yet because I have to assume that even from a business standpoint, they won't allow him or feed him. Unless this is just now like a I'm stubborn, you're stubborn contest.
Could easily be. And to your point about the Raiders, they do have an additional first round draft pick in the 2020 draft, obviously via the Khalil Mack trade. Although they did have to, for like no reason at all, the Raiders also sent back their second round pick for that Khalil Mack trade, but have another third rounder. So theoretically, if they really did want to, this is a thing that they could
go after.
Make happen.
So Wayne Gallman left this contest against the Vikings with a concussion. I don't know if he's going to clear protocol in time. It doesn't really matter because Saquon Barkley is trying to beat this crazy timeline and return from the high ankle sprain. Matt, tell me, James, tell me if you agree with me. It is not, in my estimation, worth it. Thirsty friends who are on the waiver wire to try to grab this Jonathan Hillman imposter.
Hillman. He's got an eye stuck in there. Hillman. It looks like Hillman, but he's got that tricky...
Right, we thought maybe he was related to Ronnie. No, he's his own thing.
Which is probably for the best, to be honest.
Do we have any empirical evidence that...
He's a human
that
being?
Wayne Gallman has been penalized by the league because his name is Wayne Gallman?
Are you saying like this is the most boring name of all time?
Yeah, like is it possible that there's a conspiracy that maybe he didn't have a concussion?
Well, I mean,
is
this is an offense that has Daniel Jones at the center of it.
Jones,
so I don't think that they
the ball
care
off
about
to Wayne Gallman.
This is pretty vanilla, right? This is like as vanilla as it gets. So it's maybe like artisanal vanilla. So it's like a Gettleman fever dream.
Yeah.
Artisanal vanilla. Yeah.
Right. Like the little speckles of vanilla in there.
Little flakes.
You know, that's important, right?
Dan Jones to John Hillman, we think might be more exciting than Dan Jones to Wayne Gallman.
I mean, he's an undrafted free agent.
Somebody wake me up in week seven.
Yeah. Probably just not going to care. Like Gallman was, I don't think Gallman's like a good player or anything.
You've said he was a workman.
He's like the ultimate.
Guess what's blocked?
Maybe a jag, like maybe just another guy type of running back.
He's an aspiring journeyman.
He's an aspiring
oh, that's great,
journeyman
James. Well done.
Running back. But that's good enough when you get like 20 plus touches against Washington to do really well in fantasy. I don't know if old Johnny Hillman against the Patriots on a short week, I don't know if I'm messing around with
Johnny
that.
Johnny Hillman is like he's a plainsman. Do you know what I mean? I think he feels more comfortable like sowing his fields.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Rotating his crops.
I think so.
Okay. Makes sense.
Now, if you do want to just play the narrative here, after he originally played for Boston College in 2014 to 2017 and graduated and transferred to Rutgers, where he finished his...
Hillman, you're speaking of.
Hillman, yeah. Finished his career, led the team in rushing touchdowns as a redshirt senior at Rutgers. Little homecoming narrative.
Yeah.
Patriots. Boston. Yeah.
But also, isn't it kind of sad to be a redshirt senior? Isn't that like...
It's like, move on.
Isn't that like when your parents hold you back on purpose so that you'll be bigger and stronger than all the other kids when you're in high school?
Legitimately did that with my kindergartner.
Oh, wow.
All right. Boys developed.
Yeah, I was in Texas. I went to school with a bunch of those dudes. They started puberty like 18 months before everyone else because they were destined to play college ball. Yeah. That's John Hillman.
That is John. We've just written his whole narrative now, right? John Hillman, the plainsman who was Malcolm Gladwell as an elementary school student.
We just made him sound so much more interesting
than he probably is.
He's far more interesting to me now than he was like 20 minutes ago.
Indeed.
So Matt's been taking a victory lap on a couple of things, one of which was a tweet about Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Do you want to repeat it for the third time today?
I mean, no, but I will anyways because you asked.
Oh, I'm twisting your arm.
Yeah, I'll do it. Chris Godwin and Mike Evans combined for 7 catches and 125 yards and 2 touchdowns on 12 targets. It's a nice wide receiver duo they have down there in Tampa Bay.
Do you know what the punchline is, James?
I believe it's that Mike Evans laid an egg today.
Yeah. Yes.
Someone did.
How clever is my co-host?
I think my favorite, the real clever response was someone replied to me and said, yeah, did you see all that production Will Fuller and I combined for today too? I was like, yeah, 217 yards between the two of you. You guys crushed it.
So are we tilted or jilted about Mike Evans?
What did I say earlier? I think I'm jilted because like preseason expectations here. I said tilted earlier. I don't remember what I'm saying.
What do you feel right now?
Right
in the
now,
present, Matt?
In the moment. I'm writing for in my Sunday night recap column in the one of the 5 things I don't care about this week are the preseason expectations for Mike Evans, because 5 weeks into the season here, Mike Evans is not getting like number one, like all-star volume. He's averaging 7 targets per game. Godwin has been at absolute worst, he's been a 1B in this offense.
With a broke-ass hip.
Yeah. With a broke-ass hip. And I mean, you can say it's because maybe he's just straight up more talented. Maybe it's because he's going to see the more advantageous matchups because he's that sort of big slot flanker move around the field, whereas Mike Evans is
a versatility issue.
Versatility issue, just an X receiver guy, doesn't get yards after the catch, gets the downfield targets. Like, he's going to be volatile week to week. There's no scenario really to me anymore where Mike Evans becomes this top 8 wide receiver, which is what he was drafted to be. Pretty much everywhere.
Well, I mean, the argument too is he had this crazy catch radius and he had a quarterback who struggled with accuracy and just wanted to sling the ball deep and could convert on those 50-50s and, you know, keep his quarterback in line. And now you have Chris Godwin who can climb all sorts of ladders as well all over the field and isn't as much of an obvious target. We should mention that the Bucs, I think we said this earlier, have Carolina, but that is, I have to imagine that James Bradbury is going to be pretty pissed after giving up like 2 scores to Chark this week. And he's going to probably try to put the clamps down on Evan. So I don't like his matchup. And then they go into the bye, and then you're in week 8 at Tennessee. Your team, buddy.
Tennessee can actually cover people, and I think what they're 3rd in the league in points allowed. So that's the one thing my squad has going for it is what they can do on the other side of the ball.
Jeez, Tampa Bay, Carolina already got a rematch. Like, we just saw these two teams play each other a few weeks ago.
By the way, Bruce Arians is like in love with Godwin, isn't he? Like he wants to marry Godwin, and I think that's probably we're seeing the result of that in this narrative as
well.
You're
right; he did talk him up a lot.
Oh my gosh,
a lot in the preseason. I had forgotten that.
It's one of those things where like the coach, like the outrageous coach speak, where a guy just like comes out and makes, you know, some ridiculous like, we're going to feed CJ Spiller till he pukes. Like, we're going to give Christian McCaffrey 40 touches a game. Bruce Arians comes out and says, oh, yeah, I'm getting Chris Godwin 100 catches this year. And we're all like, okay, I mean, look, he might not get him 100 catches, but it does mean he really likes him. No, damn, he might get him 100 catches this year.
Incidentally, Liz got tilted a little earlier when she was doing one of her other things that she does, and everybody thought it was pretty hot.
Go on.
Yeah, that happened.
Thank you, James.
You're welcome.
Oh, my God. Now I'm tilted again. So Teddy Bridgewater. Brett wrote on the outline, tutties for Teddy.
Matt. Teddy for tutties. Yeah, you know.
Tutties is a slang term on the streets for touchdowns.
Yeah, the mean streets of Agoura Hills.
Hey.
Teddy Bridgewater did things. I know you don't care about him, though, Matt.
Well,
do you still not care about him? Because you can be fickle.
I'm going to trip over while taking my victory lap on Will Fuller and all that other stuff here, because like I definitely got to say, I got to own up to being a little too harsh on Teddy Bridgewater the last few weeks. To be fair, I think his play deserved it the previous 2 starts. And when he came in relief against the Rams, he looked like the ultimate game manager, like not pushing the ball down the field at all and any of that. Now, but today, he was great. I think he actually was hitting on deep passes. He was threading the needle, good accuracy.
Threading the needle, huh?
And he's got a 5-star quarterback name, meaning he should
Bridgewater.
Be Teddy Bridgewater?
That's a good quarterback
name.
This guy
should own a planet. Like, come on. He should
own a planet.
Completed 26 of 34 for 314 and 4 touchdowns, no sacks, only 1 interception. Michael Thomas went off for, oh God, Michael Thomas is so f***ing efficient.
Yeah, he's so good.
11 of 13 for 182 and 2 with a nice 42-yard catch that was very gorgeous.
He's the best. I love Michael Thomas.
That is Matt's favorite.
And another somewhat pedestrian game for our first round pick in the NFFC, Alvin Kamara. Meanwhile, Christian McCaffrey just keeps rubbing it in our faces.
So this is a point that James is making because when we had our pick, it was decided. James was texting me who he was live at the draft. You know what? You and I were doing that damn live thing when Antonio Brown...
Yes.
I was going to the Raiders. I was supposed to fly to Vegas to be with James and then couldn't do it because we had the rehearsal for FFL and then we did that live stream about the Raiders cutting Antonio Brown. While that was going on, James is like furiously I'm in a room. I'm drafting. What's going on? Running back ranks. And I said Alvin Kamara should be the number one overall running back.
Second. So, I had a pretty good feeling that Saquon was going to go first. So, really, I knew that we were going to be looking at Alvin or Christian.
Mm-hmm. Or Zeke. But Zeke was holding out at the time.
Plus, he's Zeke. And I don't know. It's just not that fun. It's not that fun to have Zeke.
I get it.
In my opinion.
So, I was vehement.
She was very vehement that Alvin was the way to go. Even though, you look at that Carolina offense, and you're just like, but man, they're just going to ride this dude until the wheels fall off.
Yep. You know what the funny thing is too? I mean, I was on Alvin Kamara as the first overall pick in the draft. Yeah. And I was gonna talk out of both sides of my ass here because I was gonna say, like, well, you gotta remember that Drew Brees, he's not there. So that shaves off the ceiling of the whole offense. But then Carolina also doesn't have Cam Newton,
right.
Can't really say that. I think McCaffrey's just taken his game to he's gotten better every single year. And
also maybe the wheels will fall off the wagon.
I just don't. I don't want to.
When
pour,
you're seeing that did, sort of touch total, he and he left the game
the,
with
missed the last few
yes.
drives.
I don't want to pour salt into the wound, but had we taken McCaffrey, we would be 5-0 right now. I don't want to say that, but I did. I just did.
Well, what is our record right now, James?
We're scratching at 2-3 if we can hold on this
week.
But
there's also a points total.
Yes, and we're still in the mix points wise, which is actually way more important in the NFFC than the record is.
There you go.
That's correct.
But yeah, Alvin Kamara, is he leaving you tilted or jilted? Clearly, I know my friend James here opinion.
Jilted with a J.
Just jilted. I mean,
you are jilted over Kamara.
No, I mean, I'm sorry, just tilted. No,
oh,
just tilted.
I thought, okay.
No. My bad. Let's not forget that. Alvin Kamara had one of these monster McCaffrey-like games not that long ago against Seattle when everyone's honking about McCaffrey MVP, got to be in the conversation. Because everyone just doesn't want to admit that it's always going to be a damn quarterback every year. He had this type of game not long ago when he went against Seattle and caught 9 passes for 92 yards and a touchdown scored and 69 and another touchdown on the ground. So, I think, he hasn't hit that massive ceiling yet, but he's getting all of the work in this backfield. And the offense is only going to get better as the year goes on. So I'm just tilted right now, but legitimately tilted, not completely brushing it off because it has been a couple of floor games the last
this is
weeks.
Not a flippant tilt. This is a thoughtful tilt.
A thoughtful tilt. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
Jared Cook has managed 6 targets in back-to-back games, and he did get lucky this week, but I think that is about matchup. I'm not touching him against Jacksonville next week.
No, the only teams that you should be playing Jared Cook on are the ones where you really hate yourself and you didn't grab Will Disley or something like that, and you're asking should I start Dawson Knox or whatever.
We both get to take a victory lap on the next matchup, which is at Houston and Atlanta. This was a matchup that we highlighted on Thursday's show. Well, Friday's show. We recorded it on Thursday, saying it could be a get-right game for both Will Fuller and Calvin Ridley. Now, Calvin Ridley did get right, but Will Fuller got real, real, real right.
He got right, from just the entire season of, coming under 70 yards in every single game he goes out. And I think Graham Barfield from NFL.com tweeted out that in PPR scoring, this was the 9th best fantasy game a receiver has ever had in the history of fantasy football. So, pretty wild. 16 targets. No one else sees more than 8. He goes over 200 yards, catches 14 passes, obviously scores 3 times. The Atlanta Falcons can, just get out of my life forever. I'm sick of looking at this team. I mean, you as a Titans fan, you had to be watching last week Marcus Mariota, dropping dimes on this defense. I mean, not even really dropping dimes. Just
how are you
liking
A.J. Brown? You like him. He had a couple good plays this week, too.
I don't think again. I realized how big A.J. Brown is. He is a beastly.
It's because he was playing next to DK Metcalf in college, so you don't realize the
imposing figure.
Broad shoulders. Broad shoulders.
He's a guy that should be able to win some 50-50 balls and run over some people if we ever get a quarterback that can get the ball to him.
He has looked better in just his first five games than Corey Davis has like at any point in his career.
Corey Davis just looks like Corey Davis, a frustrated
dude.
Who
said not to draft Corey Davis?
Liz didn't want Corey Davis. All I can say in my defense is that when I took him, it was so late because nobody wanted him that it was. I took him as depth, and he sits on our bench where he belongs.
Yeah, I hate adding including him on a few waiver week. Wires too. Yeah. So,
by the way, if you told me that the lead singer of Third Eye Blind was a dude named Dawson Knox, I would believe you.
I love the name. Like, I love the name Dawson Knox for a football player.
I would take it in stride, and I'd be like, oh yeah, that sounds right.
Scott, I actually Wikipedia. It's Jonathan Hillman. Is the name of Third Eye Blind.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Jonathan
very
Hillman.
Cool. Very good.
Oh, yeah. Nice callback, Brett.
Yeah.
Over
yeah.
There. Welcome. Sure. Welcome to the show.
I think they just put out a new song. Look wow. At that. In the year 2019. Who would have thought?
I mean, if anyone's taking a victory lap, clearly it's Third Eye Blind. Well deserved. The Bears aren't taking a damn victory lap. Oh, my God. It has been a bad week for all of Liz Lowe's lovers and teams. My goodness. From the Rams to the Bears to the damn Jags. 0-3 on loads of teams.
Woof. Yeah, no revenge game for Khalil Mack. You hate to see that. Gruden was, I think he said he was supposed to be dancing in the locker room, but that definitely looked like a seizure after the game, like something.
I thought
that
it was a blood sugar issue.
Yeah, something. He was hyped up, but look, like you said earlier, they're 3-2. They're better than I think even they probably could have expected.
That was James's point
at this
for
point.
Sure.
Yeah,
and they did it without Tyrell Williams.
Did it without Tyrell Williams, and Josh Jacobs was
had himself a game.
Once like
we have Josh Jacobs,
I know.
There are a few members of the fantasy.
Hashtag nobody cares about your fantasy team, but when James Sorday is on our damn podcast, all I want to talk about is our fantasy team.
I'm liking like the moratorium on like every single pick that you guys have had so far. Because we've had a Kamara, we've gone all the way to Corey Davis.
We have Derrick Henry, by the way.
Oh, hell yeah.
That was a homer pick that I'm very proud of because he's been steady for us.
Like, yes.
Because he keeps scoring.
So. Unlike Josh Jacobs, who did come to life completely... unimaginable way.
Yeah, I had some. There was one DFS lineup where I played Josh Jacobs.
So, what was your thought process?
Volume. Like, I didn't think that, like, with a game like this, that number one, like, it's played on a neutral field because this was in London. I think that always, you know, lends it doesn't know. It just means that no one's going to have that home field advantage, you know? Like,
Do you think Sophie Turner was. No, it wouldn't have made sense. I was going to say, do you think Sophie Turner was rooting for the Bears because of House of Tyrell?
I thought she was rooting for... I mean, that was why I wasn't surprised that the Bears lost, because the Starks always end up dead, you know what I mean?
Wow. Oh, snap.
But I was... The process really was just, like, I think he's going to get a ton of volume because he's really the only game in town. Actually, DeAndre Washington popped up for a little bit here and there today. Actually, vultured one touchdown, but didn't matter because Jacobs found it into the end zone two more. And the Bears, obviously, tough matchup, but sometimes if you're going to give the guy, you know, the ball enough, like, it's not going to matter. That was my thought process here. And
we saw them with Dalvin Cook the week before too.
Yeah, you're paying to be contrarian too. Like that's an okay thing to do sometimes in daily fantasy when you want to, you know, he's not like a $11 Auden Tate flyer or whatever, but hey,
$10 easy.
$10 Auden Tate flyer or what? Hey, he popped in that end zone too.
The Chase Daniels experience. What are we thinking about it? Like, I think here's what I've got. Allen Robinson is going to get fed talking about volume, right? Like this is Allen Robinson is steady Eddie. You know, he reminds me of Robert Woods last year.
I mean, way better player than Robert Woods.
Fine.
But,
but in terms of like constant production, steady, just when Cooper Kupp was out, Robert Woods was not the flashy player, but he was the workman who was getting it all done. And Allen Robinson did have a gorgeous play. And you can talk about his, you know, success rate versus coverage stats all you want, Mr.
Awesome
reception
today.
Presumption. Sure. Great. But I think that you're always going to start. He's a solid, high end wide receiver too every week.
Yeah. He had been a floor play coming into this game. He had 6+ catches in 3 or 4 games, seven or more targets in every single game. So you were looking at him as that floor guy, and he was getting a ton of volume in terms of like his market share, the Bears offense. So you did see that floor. And then today, like Chase Daniel, he throws 2 picks, takes 4 sacks, but still completed over 73% of his passes. Like that's not something that you're going to see at 7.7 yards per attempt. You're not going to see that combination line up for Mitch Trubisky. If Mitch Trubisky's ever going to complete that kind of rate of his passes, he's going to be doing it like 4.5 a pop. So it's that stability at the quarterback position against a bad secondary, all caveats to consider here. But I think you saw that when that volume is going to turn into production is when you actually get a stable quarterback back there.
Moving, so obviously both these teams are going on bye next week because they're coming out of the London game. And then David Montgomery is going to have the Saints. I don't like any of these matchups. And we talked about this a little bit on Thursday's episode, but the frustrating thing about David Montgomery is I do believe him to be a versatile player. And it's so frustrating that Jordan Howard was cut because he made the Bears' offense too predictable. And yet Matt Nagy isn't using David Montgomery's versatility in such a way that prevents him from being predictable.
But I think that Montgomery has enough, like, proof in the passing game that he's a solid player. Like, he's had three catches in a couple of games, so like that's enough.
Tariq Cohen's getting seven targets. He's getting as many targets as Anthony Miller, and I know that's part of what you have under center and the matchup.
It's the game script too. They fell behind 14-0 really quickly, and I think that's a situation where a player like Montgomery, he's just not.
Is he game script dependent?
Well, and he's just not like a net negative in the passing game like Jordan Howard is. Like you said, everyone knows when Jordan Howard's out there, 95% of the time it's going to be a run play. Montgomery at least gives you a little bit of thought, but when you're going into halftime down 17 points, you're probably playing Tariq Cohen a lot. And to be fair, he still had 4 for 26, I think, heading into the half. So
the Green Bay Packers trounce the Dallas Cowboys, who have lost two in a row now. And this is another thing you can be half. Sometimes in fantasy, you're half right, you know? Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers was my bust of the week. He did pass for 238 yards. He didn't score a single touchdown, even though the Green Bay Packers won by 10 points over the Cowboys. I thought, and I think we all agreed, that this was going to be a game that was kept on the ground, right? Mm-hmm. That the Green Bay Packers were vulnerable on the ground. This should be a big Zeke game. In fact, it was an enormous Aaron Jones game. 19 carries for 107 yards and 4 touchdowns, averaging 5.6 YPC while he was doing it against a solid Dallas Cowboys defense. I also think that Tyron Smith, the Cowboys' left tackle, not being in really did fluster Prescott in a way a lot of people didn't anticipate.
And Lyle Collins got hurt in this game, too. So there was a picture I tweeted out of, like, Dak in, like, perfect drop back form, but, like, three defenders right in front of his face. I was like, this seems problematic.
Circumstance forced the Packers to free Aaron Jones, and this is what happened.
You're right. Jamal Williams was concussed, and... Do you think, James, this is because obviously you're familiar with this. He was the former OC in Tennessee, Matt LaFleur, now the HC in Green Bay. So I know you have familiarity because of the team you root for. You were frustrated with his indecisiveness about the backfield at the top of last year in Tennessee.
Absolutely.
We saw shades of that in Green Bay. Do you think this performance from Aaron Jones is enough to make Matt LaFleur have his week 14 aha moment about Derrick Henry?
I mean, it should be more than enough. It should be indicative of what he does moving forward. But we're talking about a guy who, he called the 30th ranked offense in the league last year and somehow got his own.
Well, I heard he had a cup of coffee with Sean McVay.
Like, it's crazy. Like, if this is a guy who's going to keep failing upwards, then he's probably not too worried about what plays he's calling.
Also, welcome to America.
Do you know what I thought was interesting? Like, before the early game kickoffs, Aaron Jones had apparently said that he thought he could match Ezekiel Elliott, go toe-to-toe. Looks like, by the way, that he was conservative in that estimation. He well outkicked Ezekiel Elliott in this game. But the funny thing is, because we're talking about Matt LaFleur, he apparently said on that, he's like, I'm more or less, you never go for any bulletin board material. They do a damn good job running the football. Zeke is a damn good back. And by the way, we're playing a pretty damn good defense. It's like, man.
Button it up a little bit there.
A little weird to not like come out and be like, yeah, I mean, I think we've got the better back in this game. And like, he could definitely do that. It's weird that he like was, I don't know. I thought it was a strange thing for a head coach to say. And then like for Jones to come out there and really dominate, I thought was a statement performance, if you will, by Aaron Jones.
And by the way, that game was, for those of you who didn't see it, that game was not nearly as close as the score might suggest.
No, I mean, it was at one point like, oh man, Dallas. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you have to, if you're Dallas, and I was as hyped as anyone was about Dallas in the first 2 weeks.
That's still a fair estimation, though, because it's not like Dak didn't put it up in the air. He did. I mean, Amari Cooper managed 226 yards. Like, Michael Gallup, in his game back from injury, went for over 100. So Kellen Moore
14
is still
targets for both,
airing it out. In a even with the injuries to the O-line.
Even the ghost of Randall Cobb had 50 yards.
Well, it was a revenge game. So
I don't know if you know, he and Aaron Rodgers shook hands before the match.
But the thing about that was, like, so I was watching this pretty much this game just exclusively because, like, all right, I don't care what the Broncos and Chargers are doing over there. And what stood out to me was, you know, yeah, Dak made some unbelievable throws, like, to Gallup, to Cooper in that third quarter when they were really trying to put it back together. They were, you know, well out of the game at that point, but obviously trying to make it interesting, which you could say they successfully did in the second half with 24 points. But it was still also sandwiched with some, like, crucial mistakes too. So the problem for Dallas and what they're going to hear, you know, all the talking heads say is, well, yeah, you go out and you cream the Giants, Washington, the Dolphins, and then you take two pretty bad looking losses to the Saints and Packers. Or have you really taken that next step in terms of, like, the best teams in the NFC?
No.
It didn't look pretty, but it is hard for me. When would you ever imagine Dak Prescott passing for over 400 yards and two touchdowns?
The problem is, though,
it's like, not getting it done. I understand it, but it's not as though the passing element and ability isn't there, even if it hasn't translated into wins.
No, you're right. And there was also just some, like, just unfunctional protection today too. Like Cameron Fleming, holy hell, bro. Like, maybe he was having that, like, remember that game a couple of years ago when Zeke was suspended and everyone was talking about, oh, see, Dak can't play without Zeke, but it was really Chaz Green is playing for Tyron Smith at left tackle,
right.
And he got, I think he let up like seven freaking sacks to
the
Falcons.
Adrian Claiborne.
Adrian Claiborne had like the game of his life. That was like Cameron Fleming today on several plays against Za'Darius Smith and all those Packers guys, who also, by the way, came into some bulletin board material. I wasn't aware of this, but apparently Ray Lewis said no one in the front seven for Green Bay has any leadership. And so every time Za'Darius Smith would sack the quarterback today, he would do that little Ray Lewis dance.
Nice.
Cool.
It's like, see, sometimes
I really wanted, speaking of that stuff, I really wanted Aaron Jones to do the Zeke eating thing after one touchdown, just because, like, it would be so extra. Week 7, I think, is the biggest test for the Dallas Cowboys because they get Philadelphia, and we've talked about their secondary. So that should be a high-scoring affair, and hopefully enough balance that this team can turn things over, though, you know, I don't really care about the NFC East.
Do you think there's anything going on in Dallas where, you know, because Dak doesn't have a deal and because every time he goes out there, he's basically playing for the deal that he's willing to wait for, that Jerry Jones is saying, you know, I don't want Dak Prescott winning games for us. I want Dak Prescott managing games for us, and I want Zeke Elliott winning games for us.
Because one player has already been paid.
Correct.
And so...
And games like today are not, that's not the game script Dallas ever wants, because they don't want Dak Prescott.
Because then he will earn
numbers.
His money.
And he's going to have to. Right?
Right. Interesting. Well, that's a nice conspiracy theory. You can keep an eye on it. James, tell everyone else what you've got going on. You've got a lot going on. You're only in LA for like 48 hours.
Yeah.
And you called me, which was so sweet of you.
Yeah. I'm actually... I'm going to do this with you guys, and then I'm headed to see my old friend, Pocket Jesus, Cairo Santos. And I'm just going to go ahead and take him out of his misery before I head back up to Vancouver. What's the over-under on how much longer he has a job?
Well,
I'm hoping 20 minutes.
Your pal Corey Davis today said, we believe in our kicker.
How? How can you believe in a guy who couldn't even put a 32-yarder... Like, and then how does Vrabel send him back out there after he's missed three kicks?
Poor Cairo, man. I mean, what is it with kickers? Like,
well, let's do.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, these kickers, man, just like it just goes and it just
like,
goes.
Like, never date a kicker, right? Like,
don't
ladies,
kicker.
If you're listening, why
don't...
would you ever date a kicker? I'm sure they got some really nice quads and stuff, but like, can you imagine the head case that a kicker must be?
12 points he left on the field.
Oof.
Mariota steps over the line of scrimmage. I mean,
well, now it's just becoming Titans tonight.
Bush League. It's Bush League. I'm sorry. No, what am I doing?
Plug yourself.
I'm sorry. I'm on a television program of the network variety called A Million Little Things that most people mistakenly call A Million Little Pieces. The truth is, it doesn't really matter because there's a million of them. It's on Thursday nights at 9, 8 Central, and it is about a group of middle-aged people who just constantly get curveballs thrown at them emotionally.
I think it is the better This Is Us.
Thank you for saying that, Liz. We've gotten a couple people saying that, like on the social media, on the interwebs, and it's nice to hear, because when we came out of the gates, we were basically being tagged as like a sad, you know, This Is Us ripoff, even though, you know, we have enough differences that why can't two shows about people suffering on a weekly basis coexist? I think they can. It's like Burger King and McDonald's. You know, you can have options.
There's room for both.
Coexisting and suffering.
Exactly. But
NCIS
now,
has like, you know, many operations going on.
Under their own umbrella.
Yeah.
I think we've created enough separation now that people can see us as our own, you know, piece of entertainment.
I think it's a fantastic program. Is there anything else you want to plug before we go get out of here and drink?
No. As soon as you said drink, I just wanted to be quiet.
Get to the end.
All right. On that note, you can follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. You can follow James on social media at
James Rode. I put a lot of thought into that.
Hey,
I'm
nice.
At Liz Lowe's _FF. That's at Matt Harmon _BYB. We out, and we'll see you on Friday.